Tonight, James fails at skills. Jeff lost his skills and Mike has been deported.
This is James from SurvivalPunk.com.
And this is Jeff from LostSkillsPodcast.com.
Yeah. I was hoping you'd jump in with, like, this is Count Potato Cheesehead.
This is Coach Potato Cheesehead.
Yeah. So Coach Potato Mike is not going to be here this week. We didn't get around to recording this
weekend.
Because
I killed him.
Because you killed him. Yeah. Hopefully, if everything works out correctly, we will have one of our patent-pending intros, this time fortified with 100% British and not Mike's very good but fake British. So, fingers crossed, my friend Kate is supposed to be sending me a MP3, like a voice clip of our opening. So, hopefully that went through, because, you know, with a podcast, everything is timey-wimey. This is the day before the podcast gets released, so, you know, parts come together at the last minute. So, hopefully that does come through, and we do get a wonderful British opening, as per usual. To really fuck everybody up, they're like, "Hi, Mike's gonna do the opening," and it's like, Mike's a girl. Yeah. What? Yeah. It'll be fun.
Well, he is a girl.
Oh, yeah, with his man bun.
You know, I got a call in from Wisconsin just to help him out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Almost made me spit my beer out with the man bun.
Conflicting schedules have just sort of got us recently where it's, you know, the only day that we really have to podcast is Saturday morning or early Sunday morning before I go to sleep for the day. And, it's, you know, just kind of a hassle. So, new podcast rules is, except for holidays. And in March, I may miss a week unless I bank a podcast, cause I'm going to go on vacation. Besides that, though, every Wednesday there will be a podcast. So, regardless of whether we get to record or not, there will be an episode.
Going on vacation, everybody'll riot.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get deported.
Yeah.
I'll get deported.
Consistency is the key. That's something I've been lacking lately. But
yeah, and yeah. You could have banked like 1,000
like,
episodes.
Are you dead? I usually have a couple.
Yeah, I've been debating on doing a couple more episodes, like mini episodes, but I don't know, and I need to get back into writing again.
I tried that; it's a lot of work. It's just the same amount of work.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the podcasts I was listening to, a business type podcast on internet.
I was never a good writer. That's why I'm a podcaster.
I maybe this is an off topic thing, but I had meant to pick one of your random episodes on the Lost Skills podcast since you gave me access to log in there. And I was going to actually do up the show notes for some SEO things. Cause I was like, I've tried to look up things and name my episodes better for what the search engines want, which is moving towards what people want. The search algorithms are moving away from computer gobbledygook and more towards what people actually look for, as opposed to some of the keyword stuffing and weird stuff what you would say in a conversation. I mean, what you would you know, actually look for. And, so I've been trying to do a better job of my show notes and, you know, titling and some URL stuff. So I thought about logging in there and trying to do that, and see if I could like monitor, and I wasn't even going to tell you really. I was just going to like fix an episode as long as it didn't break any backlinks. And there's ways around that. And, you know, monitor it and be like, okay, the 30 days before I changed it, you had this many visits coming to this particular URL. And, you know, the 30 days after it, it had this many. So, which would be like, you know, a thing for both of us. Like, you know, a testing ground for me to see if any of the stuff I'm doing is working. And then for you, you know, more traffic is more traffic.
Right. Yeah. If you ever notice, mine are short and sweet. I hate writing.
I've been forcing myself to at least write 300 words as the show notes. And, and a lot of times what I'll do is I'll take the basically the outline that I write for myself, you know, what I sent you over, and, I'll put that in there as the topics. And one of the things I was thinking about doing was playing the podcast episode to Google Translator or whatever it is to convert that to text and then tweak it up so there'd be a full, you know, text, you know, of the episode. And that would make amazing show notes with very little, like, editing work. You know, you go in there like, that's totally not what I said, Google. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, Google, you're broken.
Yeah, it really is. But since you're sitting in the co-pilot chair, what do we have coming up today?
Today, we have, skills. We're going to talk all about skills, setting skills, time frame, goals, stuff like that, and the Survival Punk Challenge.
And that's probably all we'll get to, I'm sure.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably all we'll get to, because we like to talk a lot and banter.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I have more outlined, and I'm like, we won't get to it. It'll be on the next episode. I've got one call-in question, one write-in question, and the call-in question it is. It literally is an episode we did back in the past, episode number 39, but,
yep.
You know, old podcasts kind of die. So, you
right.
know, that was, God, episode 39 would have probably been the first year. So,
yeah.
It probably needs to be updated. I mean, there's a certain point where you can just go back and start redoing old episodes because people will never go back that far.
Right.
Yeah. So
I've been thinking about redoing some of my old episodes. Now, you know, after doing this for a while, you have a different perspective on things, and you also have I bet you that my first 20 episodes, my friend Steve referred to it as Depressed Jeff. Depressed Jeff did the podcast because he was reading all the time instead of just talking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I try to do as minimal notes as I can. That way I'm not reading from a script. I'm just like, oh, that's what I want to talk about. So, and then I'll just, and if you hear Mike in the podcast sometimes, he was like, I don't edit the show notes, or I don't edit the notes to myself, the outline, until like I publish them. So there's like misspellings and like, they're shorthand that only I can even understand sometimes. He's like, what does that even mean? I'm like, you'll figure it out. Yeah, but skills. It's a new year, and I don't, so instead of just making resolutions that no one's gonna follow anyway, I mean, my buddy, Grizz, he was in the gym working out, and he was like, oh, all the New Year's resolutioners are here. And I'm like, they'll be gone in like 2 weeks, don't even worry about it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You won't see any of them. It's resolutions. I have always tended to try to make my resolutions before or after January. And it just works better. But I don't. January is a bad time for resolutions, and resolutions are sort of bad in and of themselves. So I want to spend the beginning of this year focusing on some skills, and I want to make them. I want mine and all of you's guys' chances of achieving these skill improvements and skill acquisition to be better, which is, you know, setting smart skill goals and not, you know, I want to be a better prepper, or I want to be a master woodworker. Start a little smaller, buddy. Start a little bit smaller.
I want to be a better woodworker. Well, let's start with maybe getting a couple tools or something and trying to learn how to use those first.
I do actually want to become a woodworker. So I think my, you know, time frame measurable, goal is going to be to make a dovetail joint. I've not done it.
Yep.
So, you know, if I get some scrap wood, I've got a chisel now. I'll need to pick up a mallet, you know, cheap, or just use a scrap piece of wood, you know, cause there's always that gear acquisition that can be a hindrance, you know, like, oh, I want to be a master woodworker. And then, you know, you're looking at the whole complete tool list, and you're watching like Roy Underhill, and you're like looking at his shop, and you're like, I can never get that.
You know, the mallet thing, the mallet is like people overthink some things like that. You know, to find a mallet like that is super easy. You go out in the woods, you find the tree that's the size of the head you want and has a good branch coming off of it, and just cut it.
Yeah.
Then you have a mallet. I mean, it's like a skill like that. That's an afternoon walking in the woods, finding the perfect tree, taking your saw, cutting it in two places, and, well, probably keeping the firewood because you don't want to be wasteful. But,
yeah.
I mean, that is a very, you know, short time frame, easy, repeatable skill that you can do. I mean, you know, don't always have to have all the newest gear when you start either.
No. I got my chisel. Well, Serenity bought it for me at the, there's a monthly big flea market here where I live in Dixon, or neighboring city anyway. And she got a chisel there for, I think it was $8 or something.
Yeah.
Something like, it was really cheap. They always have tons of chisels, old Stanley planes, all that stuff laying around, at a really good price. And I didn't even write a place to get tools on here, because I think you and me, I guess a year or something ago, year and a half ago, somewhere around there, 2015, we did an episode all about tools and where to find them, how to get them, how to take care of them. So that would, I'll link to that.
Yeah, I mean, the flea market, like getting your stuff there, that's the perfect place. First of all, you're not going to be good with the tool in the first place. So why would you go buy something brand new and really super expensive?
Right.
Because you could destroy it. I mean, a chisel's hard. Well, not necessarily. A chisel isn't necessarily hard to destroy, but you know what I mean? There's some things that if you do it, you mess up. Why buy a $100 thing when you could buy it at the flea market for $20? And if you destroy it, you destroy it.
Right. I toyed around getting the cheap set of like three chisels at Walmart for like $5 or whatever. You know, because I was like, well, I'm not going to be skilled. It doesn't matter. But I kind of wanted to give myself at least a little, like, so obviously if I go out and buy the new Stanley chisels on Amazon, you know, I'd be out like $100 for a decent quality chisel. But buying old chisels that were made of good materials and well-crafted is a way to little save a little bit of money where, you know, you're getting something good, and it'll hold the edge. It'll be a good quality thing, and you're not, and it's not that expensive. Where if you do fuck it up, then you know you go back to the flea market next month and you buy a new one.
Well, right. That's the same with me and axes. Whenever I see an axe at a yard sale, if I look at it and it's a good axe, I buy it.
It's a good point.
You know, I mean, it's more than likely it's probably 50 years old because it was in someone's basement or garage or whatever. and it's good steel, you know.
Right.
And if I break the handle, well, then I go buy a new handle, and I got like five other axes I can use. I must have five or six, I think, easily.
Oh, yeah. I've got one, and it's shit.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the problem with new stuff nowadays is the steel is shit. I mean, it's cheap China drop forged junk, and, you know, that's something bad, you know, where you can find that old axe at a flea market and find something good, you know?
Yeah, and I've seen axe heads at flea markets and yard sales, and just haven't got around to getting one, so...
Oh, there's a big group on there on Facebook, Axe Junkies. They just, you know, they go around and buy that stuff and then trade it to each other. And, I mean, it's a whole thing.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy. Yeah, I'll have to add you to that group on Facebook when I go on there later after the podcast. I'll add you so you can see it.
See
it's
all
crazy.
The axe porn, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds. That's what got me started. I was trying to look up my axe, and I found that. I got one from my father-in-law. He said he don't remember where he got it. Found out it was made in the 1930s. Things sharp like a razor. Nice. Old and edged like forever. Right. But I guess we should get back to skills, shouldn't we?
Right, yeah. So, like we were saying, beginning of the year, I like to take this time to pick. So try picking a single skill. Maybe once a quarter. Like, you don't want to make like a super long skill goal, cause then you'll forget about it and you just won't do it. So I like to pick one like once a quarter, pick a skill to work on that, and then pick it low enough. Like we're saying, you know, like, you don't want to be a master in your craft. You want to achieve a certain part of that skill that you can track and measure, so one, you don't get discouraged. I mean, if you pick a big goal, you're gonna fuck it up, and then you're gonna get discouraged, and you're gonna say, fuck this, I quit. You know, so, I like them to be short, time-framed and measurable. So, you know, like me, I have 3 months to try to make dovetails. That's pretty achievable. Even if, you know, like, if I start out making ugly dovetails, at the end, I may make less ugly dovetails. So that's what I'm talking about there. Like, pick a skills-based goal, you know, make sure that it's an achievable goal, and post your progress. And by post your progress, I mean to go in the Survival Punks group on Facebook, where we're gonna try to make this, you know, we're gonna share with each other. So, I'll post my dovetail pictures. Jeff will post whatever skill he's working on. And, you know, I want 2017 to be a real skills heavy year.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, and going with the time frame, you know, say give yourself 3 months to learn how to make a dovetail. Maybe in 3 more months after that, you want to build yourself like an old-time toolbox or something to put some of your new tools in, and you use that dovetail skill to build that box, you know. And a perfect example is I watched a Wrangler Star video, and that's what he did. He made a you know, one of them tool totes like the old-timers had with the handle in the middle, and you just kind of threw your tools in there when you're walking around doing stuff on in your homestead.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know, that would be a good project for you. I mean, then you got a this wood toolbox. You can carry it around and then use that to learn other skills, you know.
Exactly. Which I think I had seen that Wrangler Star video a while back,
yeah.
Unless he did it again, because I...
Yeah, it was an older one. Yeah, it was like a year or two,
yeah,
or something.
I've pretty much abandoned his channel. He started just doing dumb shit and naming his videos dumb and...
Well...
Like, you're... Ugh, ugh, whatever.
Well, you know why. Casey Neistat has ruined YouTube. He broke YouTube.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Casey Neistat, you know, he started doing the daily vlogs and then naming your videos... And that's one of my things that I want to do this year. This is one of my skills, is I want to get better with YouTube. I want to learn more about how YouTube works. That's one of my goals for this year, is I want to make more YouTube. I want to learn how to name it better, you know, learn how to tag things better.
Right.
Stuff like that. but, you know, I've been slowly learning how to do it. I know you have, too. It's hard to have a podcast sometimes and explain things. Sometimes you need to have the video component.
Yes.
And I wanna do that in conjunction with my podcast where, you know, what the hell was I trying to explain? I was trying to explain something one day, and I said, this converts to audio. It's really crappy. But if you saw what I was doing, you would get exactly. If I drew a picture, you would get it. It's just, yeah, I want to start doing things like that. And learning the metrics and all that is really shitty. Yeah, I know. It's like learning SEO for everything else. And
yeah,
I didn't even want to do that. But, yeah, I mean, that's another thing. And, yeah, Casey Neistat, he ruined YouTube. He shot up to, I don't remember how many millions now. But if you look up, he made a daily vlog every day. I mean, he just basically rode his powered skateboard through New York City. I mean, it's crazy.
I've seen people talking about him. I've never seen any of his videos. And because obviously I have no desire to watch some schmuck's daily blog about things that I don't care about. But
yeah.
Me and Mike were doing a contest for a while to try to do a video every day. And we got behind and we didn't make it, but we did put out a lot of videos, and I think it was November. And
you guys did make a lot of content. I was like, holy crap, another video?
Yeah.
Another one?
Yeah.
I'm like, I gotta start making videos or he's gonna catch up to me on subscribers.
Yeah, I don't know how many you have, but I did pick up quite a few subscribers during that. And it's still a paltry amount, but
right. Yeah, I'm at like 230 or 240, somewhere in there. I think you're getting pretty close to the same.
Yeah, and then Matt French, that motherfucker's got over 1,000. I don't.
What?
Yeah, I don't know how he's doing it. He puts out like seven videos a day.
Hell.
Yeah, exactly.
Matt French could go to hell. He made fun of me on YouTube. No, I'm kidding, Matt. It's okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of Matt, hold on. I don't know if you heard that or not, but that was me opening a beer, and now I'm going to have a Wisconsin sip.
Wisconsin.
Yeah, that was funny. I laughed my ass off. He asked me if he could make the video first.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was funny as hell.
That was good.
Yeah.
It's a good thing you just took a Wisconsin sip and not a James sip.
Yep.
I still need to get some more root beer to do the five root beer challenge, the five beer challenge.
Yeah, that video was amazing. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Every person I showed that to was like, is that magic? Did you edit that video? And I'm like, no. That's
no. Then watching Matt do it was funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little green. Anyway, speaking of Matt, he sucks because he has 1,000 subscribers or something like
that. Yeah, no, good job, Matt.
Yes, Matt, good job.
Another tip that I like to do when I'm trying to learn a new skill, whatever that skill might be, is go full immersion. So when I was learning Japanese, and I don't speak Japanese fluently, but I know a few words, in a lot of languages.
Yeah.
I mean, really, like, I would listen to Japanese audio on the way to work, so like 2 hours a day. You know, you watch TV shows in Japanese, unsubtitled, by the way. Man, that's a motherfucker right there. Or you can't watch them with subtitles so that you hear the word and see it at the same time if they happen to match up, because sometimes they'll get creative with subtitles. And that'll kind of screw you over, but you'll get to the point where you start hearing words and you'll be like, oh, I know that word. You'll pick it out and you'll be able to pick it out conversationally and not like know that word in theory. But when people are speaking it, you're like, what? Or it's when it's in a sentence, sometimes like you'll have a hard time understanding it, you know?
Right.
So that, you know, like that sort of full immersion, listen to podcasts, like, try to think and do it in that language, you know, with a language, obviously, with something else, you know, you just do it all the time. You live it and you breathe it and it'll be that much faster, you know, as opposed to like, oh, you know, once a month I take out my, you know, my fire making bundle, and you know, I try to make a hand drill fire. Well, that's probably not gonna work. But if you every like morning before you go to work or you eat your breakfast or whatever, you whip out your fire making kit and you try to make a hand drill fire. I'm willing to bet by the end of like, you know, that 3 month time frame that we talked about, you will be able to make one, if not like be able to make one very well.
Right, yeah, and very quickly, you know. I don't remember where I read it that time, but there was one guy, he was really good at it, and they said it took him like 15 or 20 seconds to get a coal with a hand drill. I was just like, that's insane. That's how many of them did you do to get to that level?
You know what? The guy that holds that record, the record hand drill fire guy,
yeah,
I met him at a Dave Canterbury event, and he was teaching a class in hand drill, and that's where I learned pretty much everything I know about the hand drill. And then I think I went to a primitive skills gathering, and like the number two guy in the world for hand drill fire was there teaching a class on hand drill fire, and I was like, oh, I'll take that one too.
Yeah, that's cool. I can't think of it. He was a part of Dirt Time though.
Alan Halkin. That's what I learned from. Yeah.
Yep.
His
record was like 15 seconds or something. It was just a ridiculously short amount of time.
Yeah. Well, so a lot when they say that number, they don't talk about pre-warming the fireboard or any of that stuff. Like, it's not just like grab the, you know, the board and then the spindle and throw it in there and start going. It's usually, and you guys, if you're going to try to make one too, you should also do it. You just put you put your spindle in there into the hearth, and you just kind of go slow, and you just like just daydream and whatever, and just like warm it up for a couple minutes, you know, 2, 5, 10 minutes, whatever. It's not wrecking your hands because you're just gently sort of turning it, but you're pre-warming your hearth board. So that when you do go full throttle and, you know, start pushing down and twisting fast, you're already a part of the way there, and it speeds that up. Otherwise, yeah, with a cold board and a cold spindle, you're not going to get a 15-second fire. No one is. Not even Alan Halkin. And that's what he taught in his class. Like, you want to warm up your board there.
Right. And saying that, I mean, now you look at those TV shows, you see that they're not doing that. I mean, that's either inexperience or need to learn the skill better or it's cut out.
That's editing. Whatever. Yeah, that's editing.
Right. Well, the people that fail, I guarantee you there's probably no editing. But when, like, Cody Lundeen did it, I bet you they edited that 10 minutes out or five minutes or whatever. You know, and there's something to be said for taking a class, learning from someone that's, you know, just a master of their craft. I mean, that's like anything. Like when I went to school for welding, I learned from a guy that, I mean, he hadn't been a welder for probably 15 years or maybe 20 years, but that guy could still weld way better than I ever could. He probably welds better yet than I do now. I mean, it was just years of practice for him, years of doing it on the job, and then he got his teaching job, and then showing people how to do it. He still had it, and learning from someone that's like that, it's just amazing.
And we're gonna well, let's see, where do we want to? So I'm gonna skip the next one, which is about books. Let's go to let's just go to mentors, because there's mentors in classes, and they don't necessarily have to be, you know, the same. Like, you could find a mentor not by taking class, but the skill acquisition leap you get by talking to someone that knows their craft, you know, a lot of times even just knowing, you know, just like even just talking to them or getting to work with them just a little bit, you'll learn like a life learned, you know, they'll help you out so much faster, because they spent a lifetime honing their craft. They'll be able to spot flaws, and they'll be able to tell you tips and tricks to skyrocket you ahead, you know, in a shorter amount of time.
Right. It's like when you go, someone takes you out and teaches you to shoot the first time or hunt the first time. I mean, it's the same thing. Those two areas right there, I think that, you know, having a mentor is like super important.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, to teach tradition, to teach, you know, safety, to teach, you know, just the basic skill, to put the groundwork down. I mean, that's right there. I mean, that's the definition of having a mentor, is that's the best way to learn those two things.
Yeah. Like, I had mentioned books in there, but there's only so far you can get with books, whereas, like, several years ago, because I didn't grow up shooting, you know, a city boy, parents didn't have guns, didn't grow up around them, so when I got into survivalism and I wanted to learn how to shoot, there's a learning curve there.
Right.
You know, of everything, safety, actual, the ability to hit what you're shooting at. Because at first, you know, I had no idea how to hit what I was shooting at. And some buddies of mine that had a firearm school, Condition One, they put together a class for this group I was in, and it was like super handgun safety, like not safety, but basics, just handgun basics, you know, and it was like 10
right.
bucks. It was 10 bucks right. to go shoot for, like, you know, we were probably out there an hour or two, you know,
right.
and they went over the safeties. They went over, shooting stuff. And in that single lesson, for 10 bucks, mind you, which I'm sure if you really want, you can organize a class. People would love to do this, trust me. It's just sort of a headache,
right.
but organizing classes isn't terribly hard. My shooting skills skyrocketed in just that little class. Like accuracy, we even did some like move and shoot. We did some reloads. So that was well worth, like, the 10 bucks. Yeah. I don't even know how they afforded
yeah.
to do it, you know, with instructors on a range, you know.
Right. And that's basically a group of guys that wants to get people involved. They want, you know, that's just a gateway drug. I mean, that, you know, basically they give you that $10 class and hopefully you'll take some more classes, but
yeah.
You know what I mean? It's to them, I mean, everybody in the Second Amendment movement, getting an extra person shooting is a win. You know, the more you can, the better.
Yeah.
For me, when I grew up, you know, my dad taught me how to shoot. And my dad, he knew how to shoot when he was a kid. And then he joined the Army. And then they taught him how to shoot. So then, you know, basically when I learned how to shoot, I learned how to shoot like my dad did when he was more or less in the Army.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been something that I've been able to grow over the years. I mean, now I can shoot much longer distances. Like the longest distance I've shot so far, and this is really long for my area, is 375 yards, and I killed a deer at that distance.
Oh, wow. That is
yeah,
quite
I mean,
the haul.
Yeah, that was with my 270 on a rest. Well, not on a rest, leaning on the window of my deer stand across an open field. I mean, and it all started when I was 8 or whatever, and my dad took me out with a 22.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you can't really shoot a 22 a bunch nowadays, but, you know.
Yeah. That still annoys me. Like, 22 used to be the cheapest, most widely available ammo, and now it's still hard to find. God,
right.
Since 2012, that's a ridiculous amount
right.
of time.
When I used to go shoot, and this is a good way for a person to hone their skills, is I would shoot my 22. I wouldn't shoot it at 20, 30, 40 yards. I would shoot it at 50 yards, 100 yards, 150 yards and 200 yards. And at 200 and 150, it had to be a pretty still day. And
oh,
I would
yeah.
just shoot steel with it. I would shoot an 8-inch steel piece of metal that I had cut out at work, and I hung on the target. And you know when you hit it,
oh, yeah.
you hear the gun go off, and then you get about a second and you hear ting. You know, it
yeah.
was it was cool. And then if a breeze would come up while as you shot, you would miss. You know, so you had to learn how to anticipate, you know, wind. And, you know, that's just it's not something you do overnight, but, you know, if someone's looking to hone their skill a little more, that's a good way to do it, too.
Yeah.
Because shooting at 200 yards with that is like shooting 400 or 500 yards with a bigger rifle.
Yeah, and there's so many things like that, so many drills and so many techniques you can use in shooting to get better.
Right.
Just dry fire drills. Like, I had heard stories that some of the instructors at tactical spots here in Tennessee, they would have like their unloaded weapon like next to their bedside, and they would have their holster on. So as soon as they woke up in the morning, they put their pants on, they would have their holster in it, and they would start doing dry fire drills, you know, as soon as they woke up in the morning. You know, so,
yeah.
You know, right away, like, so they're sleepy, they're tired, and it became so ingrained for them to, you know, to draw their weapon, you know, as opposed to, like, right. The normal person that, you know, yeah, they, you know, they know how to draw their weapon, in theory.
Yeah.
But the muscle memory, the muscle mechanics aren't there. You know, and it's sort of clunky. They're like, oh, you know, they're fumbling, right. And then, you know, putting the weapon back in your holster, you know, while obviously not breaking eye contact with your target, that hopefully has been neutralized.
Right.
You know, that can be fumbly, especially if you have a shitty holster.
Right. Yeah.
You know, sometimes, yeah, Kydex is the way to go. You know, I'm not a leather fan, and if you have, like, a nylon gun sock for a holster, throw it away now.
Yeah.
Throw it away. It's just get rid of it.
Right. Right, and, you know, that goes back to, you know, the full immersion. You get up, you grab your weapon, you start practicing. I mean, that's your life. That's your, you know, your thing where you can do it without, you know, any thought.
Yes.
You know, and there's you could do that with lots of things in life, actually.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you can wake up and while your coffee pot is warming up or heating, you can start, you know, you can start sharpening your chisels. If that's right. What you want to do. You know, whatever skill you want to do, there are ways for you to fit that into your life.
Right. Right, absolutely. And you know, it comes down to all of that, you know, mentoring, classes, practice. I mean, that's all it is, you know, to practice something like I said, with me shooting a 22 at 200 yards, that's not something I learned overnight. It was something I was like, oh, I wonder. Okay, 100 yards. I wonder, can I go a little further? And you just keep practicing.
Yeah. And then, admitting your faults and your failures, and fixing them instead of covering them up and hiding them, you know, you fix them. Like if you, every time you go shoot with a handgun or I guess any gun, if every time you're pulling left of your target, you know, look into that,
right.
Figure out why, like, is it your finger placement? 'Cause it probably is, you know, you're probably, what is it? You're too far to the left of the trigger. You're when you press
right.
The trigger, you know, you're going that way. You know, so to instead of just being like, oh, you know, I'll just justify, you know, I'll just make sure I aim more to the right, you know.
Right.
Fix the underlying problem, and then
right.
You don't have to mentally be like, oh yeah, I missed because I was aiming because I didn't pull to the right like I was supposed to because I always shoot left. No, just fix it.
Right, right. And you know, like with me, handguns, I've been familiar with them over the years, but I've just, well, it's not recently now, but it's been, I didn't grow up shooting handguns. We never had one in the house. We had rifle shotguns, you know, all that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's learning for me is the same thing. Like I had a High Point. That was my first, handgun and that was a 40 cal and I could shoot with that thing like nobody's business. Now I got a 1911, not as good a shot with the 1911. No idea why. It frustrates me to no end, and I'm still trying to figure that out.
all the 1911 fanboys are like grabbing their like MP3 players right now, like, you schmuck, you're fucking it up. Yeah, they've lost their shit.
But I do love the 1911 in the way it, the weight, you know, I mean, it's a 1911 as much as, oh boy, I'll piss some people off right now. As much as nobody wants to admit it, the High Point and the 1911, they're like cousins. You know, they're the weight, or they're both heavy as hell. You know, obviously the High Point's heavier. But,
oh, wow.
You know, but, yeah, I mean, the High Point stole a lot of things from the 1911, where the magazine releases, safety, stuff like that. But, you know, it's, for some reason, I don't know if it's shooting the .45 caliber or what, but there's some, I'm not as good.
So, you know, this is how you fix your problem. You go sell the 1911 and buy a Glock, and your shooting will be better.
Actually, I got a Ruger SR9, whatever, the Ruger 9mm.
Uh-huh.
Stainless. It's basically if like a Glock and a 1911 had a baby.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a double stack 9mm, but basically more, the upper end is more 1911-ish. It's real weird. I mean, I got it and I'm still getting used to it, but it's different.
You know what? I got super excited for a while when I found out that they had 80% lower, knockoff Glocks, basically, where you could basically mill your own Glock. And I got excited and I was going to build one because I was like, well, you know, if I can just build my own Glock, you know, and I watched a bunch of videos and it seemed like the first few rounds are going to be a little bit iffy until it works itself, you know?
Right.
But after that, you know, you had a Glock. And I thought it was going to be a lot cheaper to, you know, mill your own 80% lower. Cause when you build an AR-15, if you mill your own, you know, lower, you save quite a bit of money. There's no, you know, and there's the other things of, you know, not having to register it, not having a paperwork trail, which I like. But then when I actually priced it all out, it was going to be probably more expensive than buying a factory Glock. And I was like, what? No. Come on, guys.
Well, that's like, I got my 1911 is a Rock Island Armory. It's basic, you know, bottom of the shelf.
Yeah.
1911. And, you know, the difference between that and a $1,000 1911 are pretty much the internals.
Yeah.
I just never got around to taking it apart and changing stuff. But, you know, it's just like, you know, why is there such a big difference? And, you know, I guess that could fall into skill, learning how to maintain your own firearms. I mean, that's something that's easy to learn, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, not growing up around weapons, like, man, the first time I shot the AR-15, like, the charging handle kind of confused me. And then, when I went to go clean it, I was like, how do you know, like, it was such a scary thing at first, you know, just to take it apart. And when the first time I cleaned it, I took it down to, you know, bolt, you know, I was cleaning everything in there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it'll never go back together. I'll have parts left over, you know, and, the genius design of the AR-15, like, sure enough, it came apart super easy with just pushing a few pins out, you know, a little things here and there, and then whipped back together and went bang, so.
Right. When I took my 1911 apart, same deal. That I had to watch a YouTube video to see how it came apart, and each step I would pause, and, you know, that's not a bad learning tool either. I mean, that's something we mentioned a little bit, but YouTube, something to learn the skill is huge.
And shame on me for not putting YouTube on the list of show notes. Like, that, you know how I learned how to take apart my AR-15 and clean it?
YouTube.
Yeah. You know how I learned how to take apart my, my Glock 19 to clean it? YouTube. That's almost my go-to. Like, if I want to learn how to do something, If it's an option between a blog post or a YouTube video, I'm going to YouTube every single time.
Well, you can pause it. You can back it up. I mean, you know, if you're like, I didn't quite see that, you can always find another video.
Right.
I mean, that's that. I'll tell you what. I may or may not have installed a drain field somewhere by learning how to do it on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some good videos on sort of DIY septic tanks, drain fields. Who is it? The boss of the swamp has a good video on. I think he just cut a rain barrel,
great,
a blue barrel in half, put some rocks underneath it, and then like cut the back off of one, and then the front off the other, and then made it longer.
Right.
And then just ran his pipe into it, and he's like, "Yeah, that'll probably last my whole life."
Yeah.
So I'm probably going to get another rain barrel. I'm going to have one right now and make another one and then go dig my field so I can run my wastewater to that.
Right.
You know, well, instead of dumping them out in a bucket.
I can't say that I replaced my drain field in Wisconsin because it's illegal, but I may or may not have helped someone change a drain field, you know. But, yeah. Yeah, there's a drain field at my house that works perfectly fine now. I'm not going to incriminate myself.
You know what? Everything I want to do is illegal. Just like that book by that guy whose name I forget.
Joel Salatin, I think.
Yeah, him. Everything I want to do is illegal.
Yep.
All these millennials bitching and whining about shit not like, I just want the government to leave me alone.
Right, yeah. Yeah, let me do what I want. And, you know, I posted a picture like that in a survival punk group the other day. It said that, were you conservative or liberal? And I said that the guy on the right is bad and the guy on the left, and I'm just sitting over here doing whatever I want. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the picture, but yeah, someone didn't like I put that on there, but, you know, day to day, it doesn't affect my life. You know, I'm going to do what I can to be free. And if I have to bend some rules or possibly break some that I'm not going to talk about, I may do that.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it comes down to like that sphere of influence. Like, you really, like, you and me personally have no influence on Donald Trump and the government.
Right.
You know, we could call our local congressmen and congresswomen or whatever and, you know, bitch at them. But our voice doesn't have the same clout. Oh, that's my alarm clock going off. Time to wake up. Yeah, we don't have the same clout as Monsanto with their endless pockets. You know,
absolutely.
They're gonna. So the problem here is the butt fucking between government and big corporation. I mean, and we don't have the pockets to make them do what we want. So day to day, yeah, we just screw them and do what we need, and then. You know,
well, put it this way. I'll just say, you know, that drain field that may or may not have gotten replaced with the technology we have now for drain field systems is definitely better than the 1970 technology that was put in the ground. And,
yeah.
And of course you're going to, now, unless you're a dumbass, you're going to do a better job on something for you than some contractor is going to come in and do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the part I don't get. You know, why would a guy put a shitty drain field in when he's got to live in the house?
Yeah. Know? There's also, like, the good enough. Like, with my tiny house, I literally do think, like, a rain barrel cut in half with a bunch of bricks beneath it and a pipe running into it, that will last me my entire life.
Yeah, probably.
You know? So, I don't, you know... How much would it cost me to actually, you know, run my house to a septic tank or a drain field? Probably more than my house.
Right. Well, you know? Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you get, like, in the state I live in, you have to have a master plumber come and install your septic system. You can't just have any plumber. He's got to be a master plumber. He's got to be licensed. This and that. Now, if you go across the river to Michigan... You can install your own drain field. You just have to have a guy show up and inspect it from the county.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense? Now, you're separated by a river. Just a river, you know? I mean, that's completely stupid.
Yeah. Let's jump back on topic so we can wrap this up. So we were talking about let's go back to books for a second. Like,
okay.
I don't feel that you can ever truly get, you know, the same amount of learning from a book as you can from a person, because it's just quicker and more concise, the mentor, the person that is. But books can be helpful.
Right.
I have learned a few tips and tricks from books. Usually it's a lot of reading to, like, pick out that nugget. Like, it was either a book or an article I read on handgun shooting by Massad Ayoub. And one of the things he was talking about was gripping the pistol. And it was like, he was like, there's a lot of debate going on between, like, how hard do you grip it? And, like, obviously, the consensus is if you grip harder, it's better. And one of the theories is to grip until your hand starts to shake and then back up. And then, you know, just slightly let off until it stops shaking. And that's how you know how hard to grip it. So when you shoot, it's steady.
Right.
And then he was just like, no, just grip it until your hand shakes and then pull it. Cause if you're in a life or death situation, your hand will probably be shaking anyway. So whatever. And,
right.
You know, sure enough, like next time I went shooting, I squeezed the grip until my hand started shaking, got my sight acquisition, and then shot. And, you know, I'm not going to be a professional marksman, but I would have killed that target.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's the other thing in like skill development. You have to temper your skill with practicality. You know, when you grab that gun, you're going to be stressed. You're going to be, you know, you might not be perfectly on target. You're going to pull it up, point, and bang. You're not going to sit there and go, is my grip right? Are my elbows in the right place? You know, okay, now I'm squeezing the trigger. You know, you're just going to pull it up and you're going to react. And you should, if you're going to develop the skill, if that's self-defense, you should be practicing to be in that split-second decision, not shooting holes through paper.
Yeah.
You know, I've read in books or articles and stuff where people do sprints before they shoot a handgun.
Oh, to get their heart rate up.
Get their heart rate up, get their hands a little shaky, and then shoot. I mean, it's a practical reason for doing it. You're going to be more stressed. You're going to be wore out a little. You know, that all makes a difference. And that's where, you know, you have to practice for ideal conditions and you have to practice for unideal conditions. You know, just like anything.
Good point. There are things to learn from books.
Right. But like you got that little nugget of that out of that book, you know, sometimes you gotta temper what the book says too, you know, that.
Right.
You know, I've like shooting a deer, I've pulled a gun, snapped it to my shoulder and shot and dropped deer. Asked me to make that shot again when I wasn't startled and I could probably never do it. You know, it's
yeah.
One of those things that you just reacted and it worked out.
Yeah. So you can use them. It makes so what I like to have books for is kind of as reference for those like finicky things you won't remember. Figures, table data, things like that, as opposed to like the big skill.
Right.
You know, it's like or recipes, not just like in food recipes, like obviously, yes, definitely in food recipes, but in things like you know, diagrams for building something, plans for, you know, woodworking stuff, you know.
Right.
Those kind of things I think books excel in. You're better off taking a class and getting a mentor to sort of generally acquire the skill and get good at it.
Well, we'll go back to where I learned when I learned how to weld. I have a couple of copies of this book. It's called The Pipe Fitter and Welder's Handbook. It's just a little pocket book. I mean, you can literally put it in the back pocket of your jeans, but it tells you how to like make a 90 degree elbow cuts in a pipe, how to do tees, how to do like caps for weld caps, how many feet of water are in a pipe, you know, of a certain size, how thick it is, if it's a certain size, you know, that all that crap that as a welder I will never remember. And why would you?
Yeah.
You know, you might run into that once in a while, and for me, with the factory job I had, I didn't run into it all that often. But I still have the books and stuff from when I learned, and I've looked at them more at home than I ever did at work.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of it. Like, yeah, to have that information documented and ready when you need it, because, I mean, there's no point in storing that in your head if you're never going to need it.
Right. I don't need to know how much a square foot of quarter inch plate weighs and then having a piece that's 4x8. I don't need to remember that. I can look that up in a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all the math formulas and all that stuff. I mean, actually that book that I had probably would help, as I think of it now, like doing off-grid water systems, because it has like pounds of head pressure, you know, how high your tank is compared to what the pressure would be when it comes out the bottom.
That would be useful.
Yeah, I just thought of that while we were talking. It was like, man, I forgot that's in there. But I know it's in there, and I know that I can look it up.
I've got a little pocket book that's like, I think the pocket reference book to everything. Mm-hmm. It's never mind. I have it right here. The pocket reference. I got the by Thomas J. Glover. I got the Make magazine version when I went to the Maker Faire a few years ago. It's pretty much a pocket condensed everything.
Right.
geology, airline two-letter codes, whatever. Airport codes, U.S. clothing size, USA versus Europe.
Oh, that's
formulas
great.
For electricity. I bet it has computer ASCII codes. Strength of wood beams. Strength of wood beams? Wood gluing characteristics. Like, literally, this book has everything, and there's it's one of those things, like, if I was gonna bug out, I would probably throw it in my bug out bag, because it's, you know, literally it would fit in a pocket, and, you know, hold on. Trailer connector wiring guide.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
What was this, general gas laws and formulas?
Huh.
Oh, hold on. There's a section on welding.
That's funny.
Yeah, there sure enough is. And what was it? Weather, yeah. Arc welding, gas welding rod, gases, tempering color for steel. That's yellow, 420 degrees.
Now that could be useful for you if you want to make a knife.
Yeah. I mean, obviously tempering color for steel, that also, that's blacksmithing too.
Right.
Faint yellow would be 420. Red visible at night, 750.
Right.
Structure of a welding symbol. What the hell?
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. What a great little resource. It has everything in it.
Yeah, that's cool. I need to get one of those.
I mean, I'm sure it's like $10 or something super cheap.
Yeah. I think that like that one that I had, that reference welders, you know, pipe and welders reference was like $10. It's pipe fitter and welders reference. That's what it's called. I bought it when I was in welding school. I was like, well, you got to buy your books. Okay, I'll buy that book.
Oh yeah. Also, the back of the book is marked out to be a ruler. A ruler.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, good resource. I think I'm going to have a few more things, and then we'll wrap up. We had mentioned taking classes.
Right.
And depending on the skill, but a short class where you work hands-on-hands with an instructor is definitely the best way to learn a skill, period.
Right.
They can correct your mistakes you're making right away. They know how to teach you, if it's a good instructor.
Right.
If you have a bad instructor, you know, you will learn to be bad super quick.
Yeah. You see, that's one of the things that, like, for, like, bushcraft and all that, kind of makes me jealous where you are, because there's so many people in your part of the U.S. that do that. Like where I live, not so much. You know, like you got Dave Canterbury and Creek Stewart, and I know there's other ones down more in the southern central U.S.
Yeah.
You know, and like, well, how far is it to Ohio from where you are?
6 hours. I've drove there before.
Six hours for me, that's, I could get to Indiana by then, you know what I mean? I mean, it's quite a bit more than 6 hours for me.
Right.
You know, but, you know, down, it seems like if you look at the survival community and stuff, it's all more southern-based than where I am. I don't know why that is. And that's part of the reason I made my podcast. It's like there's no one to talk about a northerner's perspective.
Yeah. There are probably a couple people here in Tennessee. Not so much survival, but I know giant YouTuber Hickok 45.
Right.
He lives in the town that I moved from, like where my apartment was at before I moved to the tiny house.
Yeah.
He lives there. So I tried to hook up with him a few years ago to go shooting. He blew me off.
No,
whatever, Hickok 45. Yeah, I no, he just didn't get a response. And at this point, he still was a very large channel, so.
Right.
Understandable. But yeah. There are probably more, although on a weird counterpart, a huge portion of my audience comes from Wisconsin and Michigan. Like,
yeah.
Those two states make up like, so it's, okay, probably my listenership is like this. Texas, Michigan, Wisconsin.
Right.
And then Tennessee's in there because I have a lot of, like, local people, that listen. And then, you know, then after that, it gets kind of sporadic where California actually I have a lot of listeners in California. So that's kind of mind blowing.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, that, I think that, like, if there was, places where I could take classes from a reputable, you know, survival instructor, that was like close to where I live, I would do that. And you know, I just don't feel like I'm the guy for that. You know?
Yeah.
I'd rather go take the class from somebody. I like messing around with YouTube and stuff, but to do like a class like that, I don't know. I always thought about a firearms one, you know, where you learn how to shoot. Teach people how to shoot rifle and stuff and do it like super cheap, like the one you did. But I was always worried about the legality.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Just so you know, Jeff, I just did a quick Google search and there are a few Wisconsin survival schools.
Really?
Yeah. Just Wisconsin survival school. I found, wilderness survival, primitive skills, blah, blah, blah. Who is this? Hollowtop.com. Some weird long name. What is this? Boss Survival School? Boss? Yeah. So yeah. I kind of want to do one of the, who is it? It's not Tops. It's, Essie.
Yeah.
Essie does some, like, jungle survival schools where, like, it's part of, like, a little package. Like, you buy it and then they fly you to, like, South America and they teach you jungle survival. And I'm like, that would just be fun just to do it.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, when you were having the survival punk get together, I told my wife I'd like to go and do that. And she goes, well, I'm not staying in the woods. I'm like, good, go get a hotel. I'm going to go sleep in the woods.
Yeah.
She's like, are you serious? I said, yeah, I'm serious. It'd be fun. And that's hell when yeah. She looked at me like I was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually kind of hoping for, like, usually we get one last huzzah of snow in February here in Tennessee. So I'm kind of hoping that, like, we do get a big snow so I can go test some winter hammock camping skills.
Oh, yeah.
And that'll be fun. So let's talk about the Survival Punk Challenge, the way it's going to be updated, and then we'll get off here. Because I'm like, oh, if we have time, we'll do the next segments. And right now, we're at an hour and 13 minutes. So, yeah, we're gonna wrap up with the... Well, one last thing before we move on, and that's... And it ties into it, and that's to compete. I personally notice more growth in learning and acquiring skills if I'm competing with someone. My desire to compete is so strong. I'm like, oh, I have to beat Jeff in this. I'm going to learn to be a master welder in 24 hours. Fuck you, Jeff. Yeah. Yeah. So a little friendly rivalry, camaraderie, you know, like, oh, right. This is what I'm doing. And then, you know, your friend one-ups you and you're like, well, I can't allow that. That'll help you learn so fast.
Absolutely. Well, that's why I like the Survival Punk Challenge when we're doing it in the group is, you know, I didn't always get time to participate in every challenge, but you know, the ones I participated in, I'm like, I got an idea. This is going to be, you know, I got to make a video like that. Yes. The one with the truck, when I did the thing with the truck and my daughter, she's like, I want to be in the video. I'm like, okay. Get in the video. Let's do this. And I showed her how to do it. And she's only six, you know. But, you know, maybe it'll stick. Maybe I'll have to show her that again someday.
Yeah. Or maybe she'll remember it and it'll really come in useful.
Right.
Passing on skills is a good skill to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Like my daughter, she loves Survival Lily on YouTube. I don't know.
Oh, if yeah. Yeah.
Watched her. Oh, my daughter loves that. And she goes, Dad, I want to make a shelter. I'm like, okay. And you know, hopefully this summer when it gets nice out, that's going to be one of the things. I'm going to build her own survival shelter back behind the house in the woods.
Yeah.
So she can go back there and play and stuff.
She kind of plays to her suits a little well, Survival Lily. Like, I've seen several of her video thumbnail images of her being in various degrees of nudity. And I'm like... You're clever. You have a million subscribers because you're a cute girl and you're in your bathing suit every other thumbnail. Yeah. Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, and I agree with that, and that's clever marketing on her part, but if you watch her video, she actually knows what she's doing.
She does.
You know, and that's important.
Yeah.
And she does show failure and stuff. I like that.
Yeah. So yeah, speaking of the Survival Punk challenges,
yep.
Matt French had messaged me and he was like, I missed the challenges. And I'm like, yeah, the challenges kind of died off. Thanks Scab for killing him. He was like, so I was doing this thing where if you won the challenge, I'll let you pick the next challenge.
Right.
And then you got to pick the winner and then they get to pick the challenge. And he picked to make a fishing kit and go catch a fish with it. And I had bronchitis for 2 weeks, and I'm like, I'm not going outside. I feel like death.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't go to the hospital, so I just sort of, like, manned up and, like, dealt through the bronchitis for 2 weeks until it went away. And so, yeah, I'm like, I'm not going outside. And apparently everyone else was like, no, it's cold, bro. I'm not going outside either. So it just died with that one. So I'm going to reinstate the Survival Punk challenges in the Facebook group Survival Punks. Change things up a little bit and announce the new challenge. So the new rules are every Wednesday when the podcast comes out, at some point during the podcast, beginning, middle, end, somewhere in there, we will announce maybe the beginning, probably the beginning actually. We'll announce what the challenge is going to be. It'll run podcast to podcast. So the next podcast will begin with, announcing the winner of the podcast. So if you win the Survival Punk Challenge, and obviously I am never eligible to win, but I will compete in them. If you win, you'll get a shout out on the podcast, you know, which is pretty awesome.
Right.
And to win, obviously you have to post your entry in the Survival Punks Facebook group. If for some weird reason you're like a complete anti-Facebook Nazi, email me and I'll post it. I'll Great. Post it for everyone to see. It'll be a hassle though, but yeah. Just post it in the Facebook group and, we'll look at them. I'll decide and, yeah, we'll give you a shout out. So yep. That's the way it's going to work now.
You know, I was thinking to kick it off, why don't you start a poll on the group to, you know, have everybody throw in some ideas and then vote on it, and we'll get the challenge started. And then it'll give you a couple ideas to get further on in the challenges, you know, have everybody keep suggesting ideas.
Yeah, I've got this week's challenge, but I do like that idea. And I have a few more ideas, and I definitely want to move. I guess we never really got too far away, but the challenges will pretty much always be DIY inspired.
Right.
And this week, so yeah, I will post that, because I never ending need for ideas. never ending. This week I want to go with making a piece of survival equipment, which is pretty nebulous. It's pretty, I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do.
Right. It could be
It could be pretty much anything. Yeah. I need to shoot a video, but I may need to actually change it, because I don't think it worked super well. The foam clothing system for cold weather, the PAL system, I think it's called. I basically made a foam sock, a foam insert thing to put in my shoe to try to fight the cold feet. So far results are kind of iffy. I tried using 1 inch thick foam, or I tried using 2 half inches to make a 1 inch thick foam, and shoving it into the shoe was pretty difficult.
Yeah.
You know, obviously there's only so much extra room in your shoe. I undid the laces and got my foot in there with the 1 inches of foam around it. And what I think the problem was that it was compressing the foam so much that it wasn't able to do its foam insulative job. You know,
right.
You compress your insulation, then it's not really going to insulate. Cause I took it out of the shoe and then just used duct tape to make a loose shell to hold it together. And that was pretty warm actually. But, and with just one layer, it doesn't compress that much, a half inch of foam. And it adds, I was like, I don't know if this is warmer at all or even colder, because I had, it looked stupid, but I had the foam, half inch of foam in the shoe, on one foot, and then just a wool sock on the other one, trying to, you know, subjectively right. decide which one felt warmer. And I was like, I think the wool sock is warmer than the foam in the shoe. Which is a little discouraging.
Right.
So back to the drawing board, perhaps. You know, I'm only out like $9 for some shitty craft foam from Walmart, which
right.
may or may not be the correct foam to even use. I don't know.
Right.
Still learning.
Yeah. Like, for me, like, what I've been doing for the winter now is, because I'm lazy and I got to go out to my wood stove, I've been wearing wool socks and then those rubber, like, rain boots.
Mm-hmm.
Ones you can buy at Walmart. I've been
right.
using wool socks and those when I go outside and do stuff. It keeps your feet dry, and, you know, you got wool socks, so it helps out. That maybe 2 pairs of wool socks and one of those would work for you.
Yeah, I had thought about getting some of those shitty Walmart rubber boots, and I was like, I don't know if they're even worth it or not. I don't know, but
I've had a pair for 3 or 4 years now, and they work pretty good.
Yeah.
And now I'm using them in the winter time. I was wearing them outside today for an hour or two, and they were okay.
Okay. Yeah, and I have a pair of desert combat boots, and they are shit in the winter. Yeah, they are not made for cold, wet. They're completely out of their terrain there. They're like, dry, hot, we got this. Cold, wet, nope, you're screwed, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think desert boots would be so good for the wintertime.
Oh, yeah, they would be... They'd be the worst thing in the universe for you up there. Here, they're just pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I usually have a good pair of winter boots, but I don't usually wear them because they're just a pain to get on and off.
Oh, yeah. So that's why I was trying to sort of DIY, like, an easy solution. Like, I want the world's warmest socks or something. I don't know. But yeah, that's it. For the Survival Punk Challenge, and I'll announce it in the Facebook group to, make DIY a piece of survival gear. If you want to make a survival knife, I'd love to see that. You know, if you want to make a rucksack, you want to make, cold weather mucklucks, whatever you want to make, you have to make it. You can't buy it. Although if you buy something and severely alter it, that could be eligible, i.e. you go out and buy an Alice pack and you put fast take buckles on it and clip on a, you know, a side pouch or something, an add a hydration bladder. By all means, I'd be willing to accept that as entry. So any sort of DIY survival gear.
Yep. Yeah, I think I have a couple ideas. I'll have to think about it a little bit, but yeah, I think I'll throw together some kind of entry too for it. Yeah. I got my new camera. It's a shame that I don't get to shoot as much video as I want with it.
You do need to shoot some video.
Doesn't it look good though?
It does.
That video I shot.
It does.
Oh.
I'm still trying to tweak and get my video and audio better. Now I'm playing with lighting.
Yeah.
The audio I finally got good. Except for when it's bad. If I breathe too close to the lapel mic, like in my water video, there's one part where I'm like, I really need to put music in here because all you hear is like, and I'm like, oh, that's terrible. But it only lasts for a few seconds, so I was like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I got this new camera. It's a shame I haven't got to make as much video. I've been busy.
All right. Well, we will definitely see your DIY video because I will prod and poke you until you put up one for us to watch in the group. And you'll put it on YouTube, and I'll share it from there. And with that, it's been great having you on in the co-host chair, Jeff.
Thanks. Anytime. Anytime that Mike, you know, decides he wants to be lazy and, you know, I'll come in and I'll definitely help out. It's always fun.
It was fun. So, yeah, DIY to build survival gear, use guys.
Use guys.